Hey, farmers and landowners, this is Damian Mason coming at you with a question. Have you ever had disease or pest problems cost you money by reducing your yield? Well, of course you have. We fight this, right? That's what production agriculture is all about, is working as best we can to put out a great yield. And to do so, oftentimes, you've got to overcome disease and pests. The problem is we usually treat those diseases and pests after the problem, right? So what if you could do it proactively? What if you had a tool that gave you predictive analytics so that you would know if you have things like corn rootworm, soybean cyst nematode, sudden death syndrome? Well, you have that tool now. It's from Pattern Ag. Pattern Ag, doing predictive soil analytics way beyond just the old days of sticking a probe in the ground every few acres and saying, hey, wow, we got some nitrogen deficiency here. They'll let you know if you have pests and disease. Go to pattern.ag. That's www.pattern.ag to learn more about this awesome technology and how it can help you increase your yields by taking care of diseases and pests before they cause you harm. Well, greetings and welcome to another fantastic episode of the Business of Agriculture podcast. It's me, Damian Mason, with a great show for you today. I've got Joe Vaklovic with Standard Grain. I've got Shea Folk with AgView Solutions. We're talking about the most expensive crops in the history of agriculture are going to be planted this spring. We're recording this in November of 2022. So we're heading into the winter and we're obviously looking ahead as we always do in agriculture. These guys put out this information that we're going to be planting the most expensive crop ever in spring of 23. Inputs are up, seed, diesel, all biologicals, herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, et cetera. So I'm saying, what does that really mean? Because also commodity prices are up. So they're going to share with you what this means, no matter what little corner of agriculture you work in, why this matters to you, big picture, historical comparison. We're going to talk about inflation and inputs, et cetera, and what this might mean down the road for producers, consumers, and those of us that are ag professionals. Shea Folk, AgView Solutions, I'm going to start off with you. You have your own podcast. You have your own following. You and Chris Barron have been clients of mine. I've spoken at your conference, and you also do the numbers for a bunch of larger scale farmers throughout North America. And the cool thing there is it's like a financial consultancy, and you get their numbers and you kind of almost compare them with each other and then also figure out how they can do a better job. So kind of give us a little background on that and then what you're finding in breaking down those numbers.
Yeah, you did a great job there, Damian, and kind of explaining what our business is. And when we go to dial in their cost of production, which is usually step one for a lot of these producers, it's pretty eye-opening when we look at what we're facing right now. 22 was a pretty good revenue year, not as good as 2021. 2023 is a lower projected revenue than even those prior 2 years. So as we look at the inputs that we will be writing a check for. So there's a question, you know, that you asked beforehand here, Damian. You said, is this really the most expensive crop? And the answer is yes, from the dollar amount, what you're writing a check for, and what you're probably going to have on the income side may not match up to what we've seen the last few years. So we work with operations specifically on that aspect. And, you know, Joe and I had a conversation here the other day. It's pretty daunting on the outlook over the next few years. A lot of volatility, a lot of uncertainty ahead.
So Joe Vaklovic, and I'm going to get to that, by the way, because to say it's the most expensive ever, that is in nominal, not real numbers. And we're going to discuss the difference because the person that's saying, hey, wait a minute, man, I was a theater major. What the hell's the difference? We're going to get into all that. But I want to introduce my man, Joe Vaklovic. If you're watching this, by the way, most of my listeners are listeners to the Business of Ag podcast, but we released the video on Acres TV and on my YouTube channel, the Damian Mason channel. And if you're listening, I encourage you to go and watch this. Perhaps the most face dude that I've ever had on. I mean, he's wearing a hat. He looks very, very like made for TV. A lot of people have a face for radio. Let's face it. Joe Vaklovic, he looks like a face dude. I mean, this guy.
You are lying through your teeth, buddy. I mean, I don't know who you're looking at, but
Standard Grain, you're a markets guy. Mm-hmm. Tell me the background on you and Standard Grain, then we're going to talk about these numbers.
I started off in the commodity business right out of college and spent, you know, like a lot of people do, I spent the first like 10 years of my career working for bigger businesses and companies. And primarily I did brokerage business, futures and options business for farmers and for feedlots. Over the last 10 years, it's been kind of a slow transition. I'm still doing brokerage, but I'm doing a lot more in terms of content creation, consulting, I have a newsletter business. It's really a content business where I send all sorts of grain market related information out to a subscriber base. And it's really more of an informational service than anything. Had a really great response to it over the last few years. Most of it's grain market related. Some of the stuff is not necessarily grain market related specifically, but it all kind of ties back to grain marketing, like inflation. We talk about the Fed. We talk about interest rates. We talk about the stock market. A whole bunch of different stuff. So that's what I spend my days doing now, is podcasting, YouTubing, making videos, writing newsletters, putting charts and graphics together, all sorts of different things.
Incidentally, if you want to keep up with this stuff, and you know what, I'm going to throw it out there. And the good thing is Joe is in Nashville, so he can't take a swing at me. I've made the point that grain market prognosticators, they're more common than weathermen. I mean, they're everywhere and all that. But he's a good one. And also, I think prognostication is always a silly game. I mean,
clearly one of my core things that, and I'll tell my subscribers in every single video I make, I have no darn idea where the markets are going. I mean, I have no interest in even attempting to predict with the market, where the markets are going or where they're headed over the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 12 months. This is more about identifying risk, identifying potential risks, identifying potential rewards, that sort of thing. It's kind of more like providing the lay of the land rather than saying, hey, corn's going to $8. You better wait.
Yeah,
corn's going to $4. You better sell. Like, I don't do any of that.
I mean, I think what's funny is I speak at meetings all over North America. And you've been there as well. The person that comes in and actually is saying this is going to happen, like, if you're so good at calling this, why are you even here? You should already have made your, hundreds of millions of dollars. So yeah, we're not pretending that we know where things are going. But with that said, you and I can look at trends. And, I'm an agricultural economics guy, but I'm not a markets guy. You're a markets guy. The trend right now is we had a lot of volatility in 2022. And, we had 30% swings on commodity prices on corn and soybean in particular. Didn't we have from bottom to top 30%?
So spring of 2020, COVID hits, right? And we think that the country is going to grind to a halt, which it did momentarily. We stopped grinding corn for ethanol. Corn's got a 3 in front of it, right? It wasn't that long down the line that corn was at 7. I mean, so it more than doubled in the course of a period of less than 2 years.
Yeah, right. And, so about a year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. Wheat did something similar. Soybeans did something similar. I mean, it was really a big paradigm shift.
Well, so let's talk about trends. Let's go back to my man, Shay. Obviously, he sees the numbers for his own farm in Illinois and then his business partner, Chris Barron, up in Iowa, and then all the people that they work for and with. Because really, what I like about AgView Solutions and what Chris and Shay do is, and I say it all the time on this podcast, the person in suburbia, that red barns and old silos and Bessie out in the pasture, that's neat. But this is a business, and you guys are more nut chopping than I am when it comes to numbers, 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 money, money, money. The money situation, Shay, it doesn't look bad to me. 2020, the federal government, to Joe's point, the federal government felt bad for agriculture because we stopped grinding, feed and ethanol and all that. They tossed $50 billion in 2020 directly at the farm sector, which means directly at farmers, right? $50 billion. There was a time when we thought that was a big number until Washington, D.C. started throwing trillions around. So that made us whole in 2020. This follows the MFP, which I think was 2018, 2019, where the federal government tossed a bunch of money and they called it tariff relief. So 2018, 2019, you got MFP money getting tossed around. You got COVID money being tossed, $50 billion. Then 2021, our commodity prices, to Joe's point, were up 50%. And so farm sector makes a boatload of money, even though the ag people will never admit that. Farm people never admit when they make money. And then 2022 right now, my guys are telling me, man, they're figuring out right now, end of year, how to spend some money to get off their books. We're really talking about 5 good years, or at least 4, right? And 2023 should be good, but you're saying, yeah, but the inputs are going to kill us. Give me, with that little 5-year history, take me to next year.
So the big numbers that you used are, really big. $50 billion is a lot of money, no doubt about it. And the alphabet soup that we had of government-supported programs made a lot of farm operations whole due to some of the tariffs and some of the other things that were going on. But it did. It made a lot of people money. The revenue there in 2020 and 2021 and now bleeding into 2022 was big. Farm operations, for the most part, in areas that were able to produce bushels or had good insurance coverage, made a lot of money the last 3 years, no doubt. But instead of looking at it from a whole government perspective, there's a lot of people, a lot of farmers in America. I care about when we work with pharma operations is what is your cost per bushel and what are you able to market it at? And what we've seen, Damian, here over the last 3 years, year over year, 2020, 2021, 2022, and now as we go into 2023, we've seen anywhere from a 10 to 20% increase in input cost year over year. So we were looking in 2021 at a cost of production of $340 to $365.
By the way, if you're a cranberry grower in Wisconsin and you're saying, what does that mean? $3.40 to $3.65 per bushel produced. And of course, this varies by your yield, et cetera, et cetera. But in general, he's talking about $3.50 per bushel of corn produced. That's been our average the last few years. And
yes. And now as we head into 2023, we're looking at closer to $4.85 all the way up to, you know, $5.30. Joe and I did a conversation the other day. Cost of production for my farm operation as we head into 2023 projected is $5.35 a bushel.
Okay. $5.35. Chicago Board of Trade. I didn't look. I know it's the CME group now, but I'm old school. So the board tells me what, $6.80. If I log on to the elevators in Indiana that I'm going to deliver to, I'm sure I can still sell $6.50. If I can, we just told me I'm making $1 a bushel on 200 bushel per acre. There's been all kinds of times in my 53-year-old life that we didn't make no $200 an acre. You made like $20 an acre. So what's this? What's the rub? So inputs are up, but so are prices. Joe?
The key is you got to market those bushels. I'll let Joe take it.
Joe, take that over. So am I missing something here? Why are we concerned?
Because markets can move and they can move very quickly. To give you the most extreme example, and this is not a prediction, this is an example of what can happen. In 2008, we had the global financial crisis, right? In the course of like 4 months, corn went from $7 to $3.50. Envision that scenario right now with inputs as high as they are. It would be doomsday. I mean, it'd be doomsday for the farmer. I mean, without those without some sort of crop insurance or margin protection, it would be an absolute disaster. That's not a prediction. I don't believe that's going to happen. I think it's like a snowball's chance in hell of happening. But crazier things have happened. The futures market can move, and that futures price that you mentioned, $6, $6.50, D's 23 corn, that number is just smoke and mirrors until you do something about it. Until you either go make a forward sale, you buy a put option under it, you buy crop insurance to protect your revenue, that sort of thing. That number is not real. That's a fake number until you actually do something to lock it in versus your cost of production. So yeah, there's an incredible amount of risk out there. The cycle of when you talk about commodities over the course of the long term, they're not really markets that trend. They're markets that cycle. We're in a bull market cycle right now. We have been for 2 or 3 years, but the whole period from say 2013 through the middle part of 2020, that was a bear market cycle where we never had rallies and we were very often below the cost of production. The risk is that you return to one of those bear market cycles, and it's not a risk. In my view, it's a damn near guarantee. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. By the way, to the person listening that's not really in on commodity markets, he's talking about a bull market on commodities, which is oftentimes countercyclical to what happens in the equities and stock market, you know, because the person's saying, wait a minute, we're not in a stock bull market right now.
Yeah, we did see a lot of that this year. I mean, you know, it's been a stock market, bear market all year. And at least the first half of the year was a bull market in commodities, definitely.
Yeah. So sometimes it's countercyclical. Yeah. The person's listening says, wait a minute, bull market, my 401k is down 20%.
Okay. That's a fact.
Well, we're going to get to the marketing. And like I said, this is not really a podcast where we talk about how to forward market. But real quickly, though, Joe and Shay, both of you, your job is advising producers on staying profitable. If we got $6, what is you said December 23, whatever, is it 660 or something, six and a half, six?
608 right now, 606, I think.
Yeah, closer to six even.
Okay. So you told me my cost of production is around $5.35. And so I can still sell $6 corn next year. Why not just go ahead and try and speak for my entire harvest? And then, you know what? The old thing is you can't go broke with a profit. So then I lock in 70 cents, 200 bushel. That's $140. Still not bad work. And I'm already guaranteed I sleep at night. Why not do that?
There's no reason not to on a certain percentage. My view, and I think Shay is generally in agreement on some of the stuff. I won't speak for him. But my view generally is that whatever you're going to go buy in terms of inputs, you're going to bite the bullet. You're going to buy these high priced inputs. You've got to make some sales to offset those higher inputs. And when I say sales, I mean like forward contracting with the elevator, hedge to arrive contracts, cash contracts for fall 23 delivery. You make cash sales as you go into this process of buying inputs in order to offset that. Not very many farmers out there who are going to be 100% sold for 23 delivery. That's just not something you're going to ever find anybody do. But there are farmers out there who have been pretty aggressive because they understand the risk. They're not really interested in trying to predict what the market's going to do. They like making money and playing it safe. And it's not a crazy approach without trying to predict what the market's going to do, you know?
I want to hear from Shay about, we've covered a lot of markets. I want to hear about inputs and do a historical perspective. Before I do that, I want to remind our listeners something that my buddy Rob Sykes says. He's an entrepreneurial guy. He started like 18 companies. He's an Alberta guy, and he's an ag guy. And he started a company called AgVisor Pro because his research has determined that 18 to 20% of a farmer's time is spent locating information, trying to get answers to questions, understanding stuff. So the point is, if you have all this time that you're spending trying to ascertain information, why not shorten that distance between the information and what you need? You can do that with an app on your phone for free, AgVisor Pro. The company's called AgVisor Pro. It's an app. You just right now go on your app store. Don't do it right now. I want you to listen to what we're saying. When you hang up from the podcast you're listening to right now, go on your phone, go to the app store and type in AgVisor Pro. It is a network of professionals in this industry that are experts. Maybe you are an expert in ragweed eradication. You can put your profile up there and other people can seek you out on how to eradicate ragweeds. You can even put out that you want to get paid as a consultant on ragweed eradication. So AgVisor Pro is a free app and you can use information from there for free, or you can pay for people. You can yourself load up your information and you can become an expert on AgVisor Pro. It's a collection of people that are experts in their field that can share information. AgVisor Pro, put it on your phone and use it. All right. Inputs. Shay, where is all this coming from? Because we were told supply chain disruptions, barges and containers were like insanely expensive. That's all been done. I just read in the Wall Street a year ago, there was 114 cargo vessels in the port of Los Angeles waiting to unload. This last week, there was like six. So we don't have a supply chain to blame. Why is everything so expensive?
A lot of the volatility that still exists, Damien, is coming out of, what's going on in Russia, Ukraine, the conflict there. And, you know, Joe can attest to that. I'm not sure that everything is 100% baked into the markets and or baked into the input pricing. So the natural gas is a bigger deal, especially as we head into the winter of 2022 and 2023 here. What is that production going to be like? And so that's kept nitrogen prices really high, with nitrogen being one of the primary crop inputs on your corn production. That cost is double what it was 2 years ago. So typically a farm operation would be spending somewhere $75 to $90 per acre on nitrogen. This year, you're looking at anywhere from $150 to $175. Just sat down with another farmer about my age here the other day, and $172 an acre just to put down nitrogen.
Okay, and give me the perspective. Last year, $172 now, and it was what last year?
Somewhere around 85 to 90, depending on when you got bought.
All right, so we're at double. Okay, we're at double. And that's on nitrogen. All right, I don't put nitrogen on soybeans. Why do I care? Because in your podcast that I listened to, because I prepared for this, you said that the margins in 2023 are worse on soybeans, and you can't attribute it to nitrogen. Why am I spending so much money, or why are my margins worse? Is it because soybeans aren't worth anything next year, or is it because there's some other input I'm not thinking of?
Prices are still holding up pretty good. It's really the dry fertilizer, Damien, and some of that is still is, whether you want to believe it or not, the impacts that we're having on the global production here and or some of the shipping and freight challenges that we've had. The rivers being low, Joe's talked about that a lot on his podcast. You know, are we able to move freight? Are we able to get things not only across the ocean from a global perspective, but are we able to get it physically where it needs to be for farm operations throughout the United States?
All right, Mr. Vaclavic, that's the one I was going to go with. I've been reading the Walsh and various sources, but the point is the Mississippi River is a huge conduit of stuff that, especially for fertilizer products, and then fertilizer products come up the river, grain goes down the river, right? And so the Mississippi River is, as Hank Williams sang about, it's going dry. What's the story on the Mississippi and its impact?
River levels have actually come back up quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. So we're hoping that that situation kind of normalizes itself. Now, we've still got drought that's widespread across the country. It's most prevalent probably in the southern plains and in the western part of the country, but it's in the Corn Belt too. So you probably need to see these rains continue. There was a moment in time where I think that the very low river levels impacted basis, especially if you had river delivery locations and soybeans in particular. That was the biggest impact that I saw. I think it had some impact on fertilizer pricing, maybe. Another factor, and you know, you could talk about inflation for days. Another factor that's impacted inflation across the board that people don't discuss as much is labor and wages, both of which are really sticky. Like, it's really hard to find labor. And if you can find it, you've got to pay them a lot. So that results in just across the board, you know, higher prices of everything. I mean, what product do you know of that's not 20% more expensive than it was in 2019? I mean, it's everything, and it's wages too. So that's a stickier part of inflation that we tend to maybe not pay attention to enough, but it affects everything from fertilizer to, you know, you name it.
Mr. Vaclav, I'm going to sound political because I'm going to make a point, but it's not political at all. A year and a half ago, when we were being told on a daily basis that this inflation is transitory, and I said, you know, I've taken a lot of ag econ classes, never even heard the word transitory. Oh, they mean temporary. And I said, bullshit. It's not something that's going to go away because of cost of energy. Every great economy is predicated on a couple of things: affordable, abundant energy, affordable, abundant food. And now we've messed with that. The labor issue is on top of the energy situation. And so you're saying that these inputs, labor being sticky, that means it's not likely to be transitory. These inputs are probably just here. In other words, this might be where we are. This might be the new normal, as they used to say during the pandemic. Is this
what that's a great normal? It's a great question, because we've heard like a million times throughout the years, especially as it relates to commodity markets, that we've hit a new plateau of prices. Mm-hmm. And then they fall apart. So, right. You know, we actually did hit a new plateau like during the ethanol era. Like we went from, you know, there were stretches where corn would trade $1.50 a bushel, $2 a bushel. We don't do that anymore. Like post ethanol, the bottom of the barrel is like, you know, now it's $3, $3.50 a bushel. So things have changed, and we have hit a new plateau. But is that new plateau $6 to $7? That might be a stretch.
But is the new plateau on the inputs? You know, the one hand, if this stuff is prohibitive, then you just don't. I mean, you don't lose money. Farmers love to combine corn. They love to plant it. They love to see it grow. They love to put it through the combine. But at some point, if you're paying $300 an acre to grow corn, even the most ardent people in Shays neighborhood in Illinois that love to grow corn, stop.
No, they'll still keep growing corn. They have to. They can't. You can't afford to take a year off and farm. Shay, am I wrong about that?
No, you're right. But the point that I want to make here, when you look back 2014 to 2019, here's your average central Illinois high productivity revenue per acre: negative $3, negative $10, positive $25, negative $6, $104, $29. The profit goes away just as quickly as you've seen it come here over the last 3 years. You don't take a year off of farming, but we're in a position now where you have a strong working capital position. It's time to prepare. It's time to know your numbers and get ready for what happens when the cycle turns down.
By the way, Joe, obviously I was being facetious, but yeah, we know the state of Indiana is in my map behind me, because that's where I'm from, and in Illinois, et cetera. We know that people say, well, wait a minute, if you're losing, what did you just say, Shane? One of those years I lost $11 to go out and farm per acre. You're like, why the hell did you do that? Well, because if you just sat idle, you would have lost $1,100 per acre because of the cost of your machinery, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, the other thing is that the markets could always change. I mean, you could plant a crop and it might be unprofitable for fall delivery, but by July there might be a weather scare and you might be profitable. So, you know, there's always that component of like the markets being fluid and constantly changing.
What about these inputs then, Shay? Is my prediction that maybe this is, and I hate that, there's a few things that came up the whole crap during the pandemic: new normal, deep cleaning, and unprecedented. If I don't ever have to hear those words again, I'll be very happy. But is this where we are now in inputs? Is it going to be $170 nitrogen? Is it going to be, I can't think of whatever. Glyphosate was the big one, you know, that the world's most used herbicide. It went up a whole bunch. Is this where we are now? We got a new floor to what Joe's talking about on inputs are going to never get cheaper than X.
How long does Russia want to stay at war? I mean, that's the first thing that's going to instantly impact that from, you know, a major fertilizer producer. I don't know as they stay this high. If you would ask someone in 2009, Damian, when they were looking at the input prices, if it was going to stay like that forever, you might have had people that said, well, yeah, we got all this going on with renewable fuel standards and we're raising great corn and crop prices are great. And that's not what happened, you know? So it's important to remember that these cycles come and go. You've seen a ton of them. And I think the idea here is it's going to make a change at some point, just when.
I think that we probably do have a new floor on all inputs, because just like Grandpa used to talk about going and getting a Coca-Cola for a nickel down at the filling station, you can't get it no matter what sale you find, no matter what we see happen, you ain't getting a Coca-Cola for a nickel. You're probably not going to get crop inputs for what they were 6 years ago, but you might get them for what they were a couple of years ago. Your thoughts, Joe?
The most simple like analogy or example that I would use that I've mentioned to people in the past is this, like, okay, so you can make what, like $15 an hour flipping burgers at McDonald's now? Does that hourly wage ever go back to like $8 an hour ever again?
No. They tend to say that labor is the most sticky, that once you give somebody a pay raise,
yeah,
they'll take a decline.
I would agree to some extent that I don't even know if I can say we've hit a new plateau. I think you may be into some permanently higher prices, but I still think we could be, if I had to guess, I'd say we're toward the higher end of what you'll probably see over the next 10 years. That would be my guess.
Before we go to Shay to talk about real versus nominal, because we teased it and I want to go back to it. Before we do that, I just want to throw it to you. You're a guy with a lot of opinions, Joe, and I like that.
Am I? Is that how I come across?
you're a guy with a lot of opinions. So anyway, and you almost seem like you might be more high energy and more ADHD than me, and that's accomplishing something. Of the ones... new normal, deep cleaning, or unprecedented, which one pisses you off to hear the most now after you had to hear it for all of 2020?
I don't know if I've heard deep cleaning. What does deep cleaning mean?
Don't you remember where everything then, the hotel, the airline, everything was being deep cleaned, deep clean, deep clean. And like, what's deep? What did you do differently?
Can I throw a different one out that I hate? I hate black swan. Everything's a black swan now. Like every day there's a black swan event. Like if I never hear that phrase again, I'll be happy.
Particularly in markets and economic issues.
Yes,
because
exactly.
It was a book came out like 10 years ago and the guy talked about a black swan event, and holy criminy, every meeting you go to, for a person to sound intelligent in front of an audience, they have to say the words black swan event.
They do. Yep. Requirement. Got to do it.
It's right up there with pivoting and stakeholders. That's the other one. Those are corporate jargon. Okay, Shay, real versus nominal. So, okay, the numbers are big. It's going to cost me $5.35 to put in this bushel of corn. I'm still getting 6+. So I'm making money. When I, in the 90s, there was $2.02 corn. In fact, I think it was in the $1.80 range for a while, and they had what they called LDP, loan deficiency payment, that propped it up to like $2.10. So you basically got $2.10. It was a price floor, but it cost you $1.70 to put in, so you made 30 cents. I don't see the problem. Is this fine when we talk about real versus nominal?
Yeah, if you're making sales and you're still looking at a 15% to 20% profit margin, you know, I don't see a problem with it. Guys, you know, farm operations out there, they're going to survive if they're proactive, if they know their numbers, and if they're locking in what they can right now. I have no problem with what that cost is doing.
And I know that Joe's got jumps. So we're going to get through these last kind of rapid fire thing. What's it mean, Shay, to the person that is out here producing? I think it means that it's the most expensive crop you're ever putting in, but the return justifies it. Yes?
Yeah. Here's what it means. You're going to buy it. You got to keep that yield up, have a great relationship with your lenders and retailers and early pay, and take advantage of this period of working capital that we have. You know, if we do have an economic downturn from the ag sector here over the next few years, you got to be ready for it. That's what it means to the producer.
All right, Shay just said, what's it mean? He's talking about from the producer. Joe, big picture, consumer, ag professional, person like you, person like me. What's it mean? What does this sort of signify? Because I'll get historical, but I want you to tell me your thoughts.
What I have generally been kind of beating the drum about when I talk to producers, and that's what I do, is I talk to farmers all day, every day, for the most part. I don't want farmers to get complacent about the markets. Because honestly, like as of late, especially in the last few weeks, last couple of months, markets have been choppy. They haven't been moving a lot. I don't want guys to get overly comfortable with the idea that corn has to be $6 or $7 per bushel, or that beans have to be $13 or $14 per bushel. Because the way commodity markets have always worked, you typically revert back to the cost of production or below the cost of production over the course of time. We haven't done it in a while now for a number of reasons. We've had a lot of crop hiccups. We had a short corn crop in the U.S. this year. We had a short soybean crop in Brazil last year. We had a short corn crop in Brazil 2 years ago. We've got the Black Sea sea situation. Europe had a short corn crop this year. There's going to be a year where the stars align and everybody has a decent crop. And all of a sudden it's going to be like, oh shit, here we are again. And yeah. I don't know when that is. I don't know if that's 23, 24, 25, 26, 2035. It's going to happen again though. And that's what you got to be prepared for.
I always reference, like I say, I've got non-ag people that listen to this, some investor people, because they want to know what's going on in ag. And I always reference my buddy from college that's not a farm guy. And if what you just said is what people like us know, and the average person in suburbia does not know, say it again. Over time, in United States anyhow, in terms of modern production, the price has always generally equaled, say it, Joe.
The cost of production, and it will, and it doesn't,
which means you're essentially working for break even.
And it's not easy like that though, because you could spend years like we're doing right now above the cost of production, and then you could spend years below the cost of production. Yep. And that's like the general cycle of commodity markets, not just in modern times, like always, like that's kind of like always been the case. So, I mean, I think it's just a matter of time. It's a scary thing to say. It's a scary thing to think about. If you are somebody who works with myself or Shay, or somebody who's going to plant these expensive crops this year, like knowing that that's probably going to happen, and you should know that that's probably going to happen. I mean, yeah, it's a terrifying prospect.
Shay, rapid fire. What's it mean for the person that's an ag inputs deliverer, seller, manufacturer, because they're going to be pressured when the commodity prices come down, as Joe just talked about, to lower their prices. Does that happen?
Yeah, communication is key. I mean, farmers understand the situation that's going on. They don't want to be taken advantage of or have any price gouging going on. At the same time, though, you can't expect retailers, or you don't want anybody in business to have to operate at a loss or have some sort of profit margin built in. Communicate with the producer, help them understand the situation. And then when things go the other way, make sure that they're taken care of.
But you didn't answer my question. The stuff that you're putting in your fields next year, 3 years from now, when we're in that not black swan moment, when all of a sudden cost of when the stuff's down, are you going to be buying crop inputs for cheaper dollar amounts 3 years from now than you do next year?
Hope so. That'd be great.
Because prices go down. All right. I know that Joe's got to hop off. And also, I promised we weren't going to take all day on this. Last thought, Joe.
Risk is the name of the game here. I mean, just I think if you're a farmer, you're listening to this, just be aware of the risk. The risk is that you're planting these high-priced crops. You haven't priced the actual output side. You've probably got to do something to balance the scales. And it's not a prediction on which way the markets are going to go. It's just simple business. I mean, you're spending a lot. You've got to lock in some sort of profit margin, I think, given the possibility that the market could drop. It's a possibility.
Okay. And then thoughts for the non-farm person that's maybe still in the business of agriculture, or for the consumer on the street. Any final thoughts on that?
Your groceries are going to be expensive for a while.
Because inflation is not transitory, no matter what you were told. Groceries are going to be expensive for a while. That's the one I'm going with. Shay, your thoughts for the farm belt and also for the non-farm?
For people that are in your farm operations, if you haven't run your budgets, you don't know your numbers for 2023, don't have it dialed in, the time is now. Get on it. Make sure that you're well-prepared and prepared for the next few years. If you're a non-farmer that's listening to this, and just understand that the volatility and the things that are faced in the ag sector is no different than any other business venture out there. And, you know, we're doing the best that we can and try to pass that along as well as we can.
It's different in one regard. The capital inputs for the amount of margin usually attained are remarkably big inputs with low margin. So it is different from that regard. And it's different from another regard. The guy has four dry cleaners, doesn't have a USDA insurance program that insures him guaranteed revenue. So there are those differences in reality. Anything else on the way out the door? Joe's got a split. Joe, if they want to find you, Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain, if they want to find you because they want to sign up for your newsletter, how do they do that?
Check out the podcast. It's called Grain Markets and Other Stuff. There's a new episode on YouTube and on every podcast app every single morning, every single business day by 6 a.m. Central. Check that out. Listen to it for a week. I think you'll like it.
AgView Solutions, Shay, if anybody wants to find you because they want to sign their farm up. By the way, and you guys do a hell of a job. I mean, I saw the comparatives that you did on their costs and boom, boom, boom. I mean, you really, you essentially say you got to do it. You force them to be accountable, I guess is what I'm saying, when it comes to accountable on their accounting.
Yeah, absolutely. You can check us out at farmprofitmanager.com. That's our cost of production analysis, or agviewsolutions.com. And just listen to some of the commentary that we have on the AgView pitch. We talk about not only what it is from a cost of production standpoint, but what farm operations deal with day in and day out. My only other recommendation is definitely check out Joe's podcast and his information. I look forward to it, listen to it every single day. As a farmer, incredibly valuable.
talking about the most expensive crop that we've ever planted. But again, that is in nominal, not necessarily real dollars. So right now, it's still going to be okay. It looks like the farm bill is going to make money in 2023, unless there's something catastrophic, which can always happen. But it looks like we're going to be okay, even though we are planting the most expensive crop ever. Last thought, though, you said that corn is more profitable in 2023 than soybeans. Yes, Jay?
Tentatively, based on your region, yes.
Okay, got it. He's Jay Folk. He's Joe Vaklovic. I'm Damian Mason. Thanks for being here. Check out all my past episodes. There's like 275 of them now, for crying out loud. Go and check them all out if you can. Share it with a friend that can benefit from this. Till next time, thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Till next time, this is the Business of Agriculture. Hey, thanks for being here. This episode of the Business of Agriculture was brought to you by Pattern Ag. You've heard me talk about Pattern Ag because I think it's a pretty cool concept. New technology that allows you to predict the problems you're going to have and therefore treat them before those problems cost you money. What kind of problems am I talking about? Pests and disease. Things like corn rootworm, sudden death syndrome, cyst nematode, and a whole bunch of other bad things that happen out there in the field that can cost you money. Guess what? Pattern Ag will let you find out ahead of time if the disease or the pest pressure is there, and therefore you're treating it before it costs you any money. What a great concept. Go to pattern.ag, that's www.pattern.ag, to learn more about their product, their technology, how it can make you money, save you yield, and also where you can find a rep that can come out there and do the work for you. Pattern.ag.